be.
Yeah! There it is! When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELB.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're enjoying some of that sweet spring weather. Maybe you're walking the dog or sitting on your veranda. I don't know. I don't even know what a veranda is. But whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. Their generosity, their support means you get to listen to it. Means we get to continue making them. Oh my goodness, we're so grateful for those patrons. And in exchange, they get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a bevy of bonus content, including 2 seasons of Feeling This, the show where Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talk about the feelings behind video games. Also, you get the book club podcast version with Lana Bashinsky and myself. You get bonus shows like spoiler chats and all kinds of other cool perks, and the Wednesday paid DLC program where Lana Bashinsky joins Kristen Spicer and me talking about, oh my gosh, so many wild and wacky topics. It's a great midweek pick-me-up, and it's only available to folks support the show at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games. And there are many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with 2 N's and 1 T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who cleans up real good, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Oh, no, I am still dirty. I haven't showered in weeks. I just got a haircut and shave. But no, just filthy. Like, I mean, it stinks over here.
Haircut and
it's
shave.
Good we're not in the same room.
Does not include shower. Does not include.
Not cleaning up. No, not at all.
All right.
No.
I think you look nice.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm just glad I can't smell you.
Yeah, all right. Likewise.
We got a big show for you, ladies and gentlemen. We got lots to talk about. The Triple I Showcase, a brand new showcase to talk about some really cool game reveals, some fun games that we have been playing, and we have an awesome guest with us to do all that with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian, but this week, I'm excited because DLC stands for Divulge Like a Canary. Because that's what an informer does. And from Game Informer, we have associate editor Marcus Stewart joining us for the first time. Hey, Marcus, how are you?
Oh, man, I'm so happy to be here. And I guess I have to change my business card to my job title, Associate Canary, now, from editor. So
if it works, that's
I'll cool. take it.
I was too delighted to use Canary for the first. There's certain D's and C's, 543 episodes in, that I've used a number of times. Never had a chance to use Canary. So I figured, you know, that feels like an informer. He's a canary. He squawks like a canary. He's an informer. That's what I went with.
Yeah, hard times for canaries over the last 100 years. I think they got kicked out of the mine business.
Yeah.
They're trying to find their next sort of like niche. So yeah. If we can bring them into the game industry, you know, I'll set them up at our desk. They can tweet, like literally tweet when a big news story comes out. I'm like, oh, guys, we got to write this.
Actual tweeting. I love it.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Well, we got a lot to talk about this week. So let's jump right in and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, any suggestions you might have. We'd love hearing from you. Send us an email. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you do that. You can also reach out to us and other like-minded folks by hanging out in our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Lots of cool folks hanging out there. I urge you to take part. But Marcus, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
You know, this is tricky for me. You know, I think as Game Informer associate editor, if you've been paying attention to us, we just unveiled our most recent cover story, which is Star Wars Outlaws, which we revealed the day that they announced, like, hey, we got a brand new trailer and here's a release date for this. If you're not familiar with Star Wars Outlaws, this is Ubisoft's open world, like, scoundrels Star Wars game, set, I believe, in between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, where you play as this, like a scoundrel named Kay Vess with her little, buddy Nyx, who, like, a cute little companion, whatever you want to call that thing, cat, like, worm ear thing. It's just cute and will make money if they make a plushie of it. Merchandising opportunity, I believe, is the species. But yes, that's coming out August 30th. You know, it's developed by Massive Entertainment, who you might know as the developers of the Division games and most recently Avatar Frontiers of Pandora. It's coming. It's got the it was announced last year or 2021 at the actually, no, it was last year at the Xbox showcase, but it had been announced that it was in the works for a long time. It looks pretty rad. It's got this set big open world where you're working with various criminal factions like Jabba the Hutt's clan, the Pike Syndicate, as well as a brand new clan called the Ashiga clan, I believe it's called. And Kay, who is just a regular person, just a thief, who's just really good stealing stuff, kind of like street smarts and, you know, just getting by with what she has, sort of like finding her way in like the criminal underbelly of the Star Wars universe. And the entire game is built on this reputation system where, you know, as you're working with this factions, there's going to be situations where you can betray them or just try to basically try to like short them in some way. And then your reputation kind of rises and lowers depending on how you interact with them. It's a cool thing. You're kind of like playing both sides, and just the relationship that you have with the clans is very like transaction based, where like even if you betray, say, the Hot Hut clan a certain number of times, you know, your reputation might drop, but they'll still hire you for stuff because it's like, well, you know, she kind of sucks, but she's really good at her job, so who cares if she killed like 30 of her guys? They're expendable. But I think that's a fascinating system on top of just like these sort of stealth focused gameplay. But there is like, you know, like multiple ways to deal with problems. You can like sneak into areas, you know, stay out of the way. There's like a detection system where, you know, if you get caught, the enemies will search your last known location, and then, you know, you can scurry away. You can use Nyx, your little companion, to be a distraction. Or you can just go in guns blazing and just shoot everybody in the head, you know, whatever. Yeah. Well, however you want Kay to handle situations, but it looks cool. I personally, as a Star Wars fan, I've been wanting a game that got away from like Jedi versus Sith stuff. And really, I want that more in Star Wars media in general, but especially in games. Like, as much as I love the Respawn's Jedi Survivor games, it's like, oh man, like, it'd be cool if I just didn't have a lightsaber. Like, just let me just be a dude that just lives in this universe, just has a gun, just has to figure things out. And this game is very much that. And it's especially exciting because, you know, like, I was really excited for Visceral's like Project Ragtag that Amy Hennig was working on, which was supposed to be a Scoundrels game in itself. And then that famously got canceled along with the studio getting closed. So this is like, to me, my like apology from Lucasfilm a bit. Yeah. I'm like, okay, here's the thing that you've been wanting maybe for a while, and so far it looks pretty rad. I'm excited for it to be on our cover. Shout out to Brian Shea, who wrote that cover story for us. A lot of cool exclusive details in that, and August 30th, very soon. Sooner than I thought, honestly.
I think sooner than most of us thought. I think this, in what is, I think, inarguably a fairly lean year as far as huge AAA releases, this looked like it was going to be the game to beat, and maybe still is, but usually the game to beat comes a little later in the year. Usually you're getting like a November or late October, you know, November release for something as big as this. And I think August 30th is pretty surprising how soon it is. I think it's a bold release date in a lot of ways, because it seems like it's a little, you know, maybe the shimmer is off the rose by the time the holidays come around, but maybe not, you know, maybe not. Especially this year when it doesn't sound like, although we may get some surprise announcements this summer, but it doesn't sound like there's going to be a lot of really big fall releases as there were last year and in previous years. So I think August 30th is pretty surprising. And it also means the game's in good shape, right? If they're, you know, not going to be pushing it later and later. And I think the trailer looked great. I don't know how much of this, maybe you have some insight on this, Marcus, but, you know, having done the cover story at your publication, I don't know how much of this is Assassin's Creed Star Wars edition, you know, or how much of it is going to feel really fresh. I think everybody going, oh, Ubisoft is doing an open world Star Wars, an open world game of any kind. You kind of figure like, well, they know how to do that and they know how to do it in a very specific way. And is this just going to be a skin on systems that we're already very, very well familiar with? I mean, I think Massive did a great job with the Avatar game. I think that's a woefully underrated game. It came out really late last year. You know, that's one of those games that didn't come out in the summer. It came out like right after Christmas, I think. It came out, you know, right before the end of the year. And I think it went under a lot of people's radar. I really thought the game was excellent. So I have high hopes for this one as well, but maybe you have some insight into that. This new trailer that they released this week was very much a story trailer, kind of establishing the factions that you enumerated and some of the tone and feel of the game, which I think is really very cool. But we haven't gotten like a map with a bunch of, you know, icons on it or anything, unless maybe I missed that. Maybe you have more insight into that, Marcus, than I do.
Yeah, so talking to Brian Shea and reading his cover story, he says it's very much not an Assassin's Creed game with a Star Wars skin. Like he said, like you won't be doing the typical Star Wars open world stuff. Like you aren't climbing towers. You're like there is a fog of war, but you're clearing it in a different way. Hmm. And I think that tracks with Massive, because one thing about the Avatar game was that it was also atypical of what we think of a Ubisoft open world, where that map was also very minimal in sort of like icons, and it very much left it up to the player to sort of like visually look at the world and figure out where you need to go, especially just the way objectives were raised.
Yeah, it was very dense and vertical too, which was very unlike the Assassin. I mean, there's a verticality to Assassin's Creed, but as you said, it's like climbing towers. It's not things layered upon each other and ascending mountaintops and stuff like that.
Yeah, so this game, you know, it's not the same as Avatar, but it is very much like eschewing the here's a gazillion icons. We're telling you exactly where to go at all times, and you're just gonna have to deal with it, which is nice to hear. As far as like the other Assassin's Creed elements, I mean, the only thing that I at least remember seeing is just like what I described before about like the stealth sections, you know, like, oh, if you hide and get caught, then the enemies will search your last known location, which is a very Assassin's Creed thing. I believe like some elements of like climbing around, but I don't quite know to the extent of it. If it's like, I don't think you're doing like full on parkour, but I might be wrong.
I saw a dive roll in that trailer. That's about the extent of what I saw her do.
That's true. Which is like, that's like the parkour starter move too.
So. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
But the end of the game, it's flat out parkour. You know, you got to level up the skill tree.
Skill tree. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Christian, you and I both, have been very much, anticipating this game. I think we talked about it at the end of last year as kind of our number one most anticipated game of the year for 2024. August 30th, a lot sooner than we expected. What did you make of this trailer?
Yeah, one quick tangent so I don't take up multiple stories with my story. But as Marcus mentioned, with this being announced as Game Informer's cover story, as a longtime print mag Game Informer subscriber, it brought me great joy to learn that you can subscribe to Game Informer print mag apart from GameStop now. It used to be part of their power rewards thing. Not, you don't need to do that anymore. You can get the print mag subscription mailed to your house directly through Game Informer. Big fan, this guy. Big fan.
Yes.
I've had the mag for many years, and I have not used my power-up rewards because that's not what I wanted. So I'm a big fan. I love the print mag. I love the cover stories. I love the layouts. I love all that stuff. So I'm very excited to see this in my grubby little dirty fingers when I get it.
Love in my heart. I feel it. Thank you so much.
they're always awesome. They're always awesome. Getting back to your question, Jeff, a roundabout way, what really surprised me about Massive, especially this year, and if you look back during the pandemic years, Massive did The Division in 2016. They followed that up 3 years later with The Division 2. They followed that up 4 years later with Avatar. And now they're coming out 1 year later with Star Wars Outlaws. Those are all massive games that are AAA in every sense, you know, visually compelling, dense, complex, cool systems, tweaks on existing Ubisoft formulas in many ways. The Division wasn't just third-person Far Cry. It wasn't Assassin's Creed with guns. And then even with Avatar, where they kind of went maybe more Far Cry-y, it also wasn't Far Cry Primal, but with Na'vi. Like they made it their own. And so knowing that about the studio and then seeing this trailer is what got me even more excited about the game, because I think this trailer highlighted a really cool sense of character and place. And I think a lot of times in the Star Wars universe, Jedi and Sith are used as a shortcut for that. And it's like, well, this is that, and this is that, and you see the red lightsaber and you know what that means. And I think Outlaws has a little bit of work to do or space to play in to make that feel cool and interesting. And I think this trailer did a lot of that. Now, it still is Star Wars, so it still shortcutted me to seeing Jabba and being like, you know what that is. But hopefully some of these other factions and other environments in the areas that they showed give me a broader sense of a vast universe, which I think is going to be very cool if they can deliver it. And history says Massive can.
Yeah. And, you know, they got like new, they worked very closely with Lucasfilm to develop like new planets that you're going to be visiting, some new like alien races. We mentioned the new, the Ishiga clan, the new crime syndicate for this game, which is all going to be presumably canon going forward. So who knows if we'll see any of this in any future like Star Wars.
They all
like,
die
TV
in
show
the third act of the game. They're all dead. That whole clan just dies out, you know.
Yeah, they get the Rogue One or ending. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, maybe
it takes place between two movies. In the second movie, nobody mentions them. So we have to explain why that would be, you know.
Well, they're off in the other. It's the galaxy's a big place. Yeah, they're just maybe
galaxy's a big place, except that Jabba the Hutt keeps popping up everywhere. On that that planet that is so remote that let's hide Luke there. Anyway,
place, and Darth Vader always finds a way to show up. You know, the dude.
I did pop my little geek fandom moment did pop, not at Jabba, but at seeing the Han and Carbonite moment from the trailer. That was cool. Where she like walks around the corner and there's Han and Carbonite. That's cool. I dug that. This looks great. I mean, I'm really excited about it. Christian, you did a great job explaining how great Massive Entertainment has been over the last decade. And, I have every reason to have faith in them going forward. Like I said, I think I enjoyed that Avatar game more than most. I think I would love to know how many people played it, because I feel like it did not do the numbers they had hoped. I think it's a shame.
It came out
of a
rough time of year. Like, December's usually a dead month.
They sent it to die, and it's such a bummer because that game was excellent. I really loved it. It was gorgeous, like visually just an absolute marvel, and super fun. Like the parkour stuff in that game is awesome. And anyway.
I need to finish it. I was so busy. I actually did the cover story for that game. So I got to go to Massive and play it there and talk to them about that. So that one has a special attachment to me for that trip. But I need to get back and finish it, because I did play like the first few hours when it came out, and then just, it was game of the year time too. So it was a lot of like scrambling to touch a bunch of things all at once tricky time.
I'm really excited that Outlaws is coming out August 30th. I feel like that will give it its own little window of spotlight and time in my own schedule to be able to really devote to it. Who knows what else is coming out around there? So maybe I'll eat my words later, but I feel like there's always that thing, or at least, you know, frequently there's that thing, maybe not this year with how weird the, you know, Sony has like no first party games. Nintendo has like no first party. Who knows? Who knows what the fall will bring? But last year, you know, it was like Baldur's Gate 3 and Starfield within 4 days of each other and all this just nonsense, crazy, like drinking from a fire hose. And I would love to think that this game, at least on August 30th, will have its own, you know, a little cushion on either side of just being the main event that everybody can pay attention to. Or at least I can pay attention to.
Yeah, it's definitely the biggest thing confirmed for August. Like I'm looking at our own release calendar and it's very, there's not a ton of stuff set for that yet. I'm most curious about how much separation it'll have from Indiana Jones, the other Lucasfilm Disney thing. Cause I believe it was rumored for December based on that. There was like a leak or a report from Microsoft that it pegged it for December. I think it was around the time that the cross-platform rumor was going wrong around before they came out and said like, no, it's not going anywhere, at least for maybe a year. But that's allegedly going to be December, which will be a nice gap. It dawned on me when they put this release date of like, oh man, a Star Wars game and an Indiana Jones game around potentially around, you know, the fall time. That's kind of cool and surprising.
What is this, 1991?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just pulled a year out that would be plausible. 87 is probably more like, it doesn't matter. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
My story of the week this week is diving down and figuring out this year. You know, what year did Indy come out on Super Nintendo and did Super Star Wars come out, Jeff? I think we really, our listeners really want us to hone in on this. No, my story of the week.
Unfortunately, it's Price is Right rules. So I have to, so I'm just going one, year one. Without going over. Sorry.
My story of the week is the biggest story, which I'll be honest, I did not watch all of, but it had some big stories in it, and that is the Triple I Initiative Showcase, which gave us some big reveals and dates and showed us footage, and then that was shortly followed by a deeper dive 15-minute worth of gameplay of a game that we were talking about that had just been rumored or leaked or discussed or wished upon or talked about vaguely. And that is the Rogue Prince of Persia, which again, there's a lot to dive into with this Triple I Initiative showcase, but I'm going to start us off with the Rogue Prince of Persia because holy moly. Yeah. When the reveal trailer is, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes and 30 seconds long. And you don't see gameplay until about a minute 40 in. But I didn't see gameplay until about a minute 45 in because it took me 5 seconds to realize that the animation had stopped and the gameplay had started. Like the style, the artwork, the art design that they're using both for the animation, the cinematic, and then the gameplay itself. I mean, it is one-to-one and just so striking and beautiful. I was blown away. Yeah.
If you're listening and you haven't seen the trailer yet, hey, you should see the trailer. But it starts as like this kind of Saturday morning cartoon style, hand-drawn 2D animation, very cel, very, you know, very classical, you know, sort of 80s animated style, which is really cool. And it's very, you know, G.I. Joe, Saturday morning, you know, kinetic, and this guy doing tumbles and being attacked. And then he dies. You know, it's a rogue-like game, right? It's the Rogue Prince of Persia. So you're going to be dying and starting another run. And so he is pummeled with arrows and he dies, and then his necklace glows and he's kind of encircled in this, you know, the sands of time, I think, or some sort of magical element. And then he comes back. And as he comes back, you're so right, Christian. It like seamlessly transitions from this Saturday morning kind of zoomed in, tight on the character's face moment to him jumping and swinging and all of a sudden you realize, oh my gosh, we're in a level. This is how the level is going to look. This is how the game is going to look. He's platforming, but it still looks like that animated cartoon style, just camera is pulled back. And the way he's animated in context of gameplay just looks so distinctive. It is very different from anything I've ever seen. They managed to find their own very iconic look. I think there's nothing else that looks quite like this game. And the mechanics that seem to be on display too are these like little circles open up that and time slows down. And it looks like you can chain certain attacks together and flipping away from characters. It just looks so rad. I texted you, Christian, when this trailer dropped, because we had talked so much about it last week, speculating what could it look like? What might it be like? I texted Christian saying, this is better than I could have possibly hoped for.
The wall run to the dagger down the thing. I mean, it has all the Prince of, I mean, it really is Prince of Persia and studio that helped work on some of the expansions for Dead Cells and like honed that game into the masterpiece that it has become. I mean, launched Dead Cells was a masterpiece when it's launched, but I think it's even better now than it was then. Mm-hmm. And having that studio working on this, it really seems like it has both of those pieces coming together. And I'm curious, Marcus, if, you know, does the rogue aspect work for you for Prince of Persia? Is this, you know, a peanut butter and jelly, or is it forcing a genre on an established IP to make it sell a little better?
Oh, yeah. It's like chocolate and peanut butter. And then what's another thing that I like? We'll say like white chocolate. I don't know. It's all it's multiple things that I love. Cause I'm a huge Prince of Persia fan, you know, starting with the Sands of Time trilogy. I've played all of them. I love The Lost Crown, which was the other sort of like surprise about this. It's like we just so got good. The Lost Crown, which is, I love. It's one of my favorite games of the year. Now we're getting another side-scrolling Prince of Persia game with a cool art style by the co-developer of Dead Cells, which is a game that I love. And also, like, I enjoy roguelikes, so having a roguelike spin with Prince of Persia makes perfect sense, because it's like, you know, the time travel stuff of like, it is weird because I thought initially, oh, do you rewind time? Is that the narrative conceit? And apparently the narrative is that he has an amulet that he's had since he was a kid that prevents him from dying. Like every time he dies, he just restarts
basically. I gotta give me one of those.
Yeah, and but it's made sounds him nice. Kind of like cocky. So then like he's like, oh, you know, I can do what I want. He's just very brash, because why wouldn't you be if you had a thing that just brought you back to life?
It's like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, you know, at a certain point he's just like, I'm a god. I'm not the god, I'm a god. Anyway,
but I'm with you, Jeff. Like, I think the art direction and the animation looks fantastic, which, you know, fits with, you know, Prince of Persia, one of the probably biggest like pillars of that series is animation from, you know, way back in with the original ones. And the animation looks so smooth here, and the art direction also, like, it has that. What I keep thinking of is that it looks like if you took Prince of Persia and just made it into a 2010s era Cartoon Network show. And I was like, that's the, for some reason that art direction evokes that, like this would come on after Steven Universe or something. But it looks cool. Like, I think
Samurai
it's
like, Jack meets Prince of Persia.
Oh, let's make that game. But
go ahead.
No, I say, like, I think all, like, everything about this is like, this is such a smart intersection of ideas that I didn't know that I wanted, but I'm excited it's coming.
I agree. And it's coming soon. I mean, May 14th, it enters Steam Early Access. So, you know, 1 month from now, basically, and we're able to get our hands on this early access. So, you know, the game likely won't be finished, but that's pretty exciting, especially as you guys pointed out, we were just coming off a really great Prince of Persia, you know, 2D game. So it's pretty wild that we're getting another one that I'm so excited about. Yeah. But that was
Slay the Spire too. Also Slay the Spire.
Well, I was just going to say that was the mic drop moment. That was the last. But there's lots more from the Triple I Initiative showcase, which we will dig into right after this break for a sponsor. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Factor. I don't like thinking about what I'm going to eat. It stresses me out. It stresses me out, Christian. I don't know how to handle lunch. It's stress. It's stressful. My wife introduced me to the solution to my stress, and that is Factor meals. Factor has delicious, ready-to-eat meals. These are fresh, never frozen meals. These are chef-crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So what I do is I go to my refrigerator where the factor is, where the factors are kept. It's the factor fridge. And I pull one out. I put it in the microwave. Boom. 2 minutes later, I got a delicious meal that I actually like to eat. I got portion control. And there's so many different options. You have 35 options each week on the menu. Calorie smart, keto, protein plus, vegan and veggie. Plus you got these add-ons, like 60 add-ons you can do, like breakfast or on-the-go, lunch, snacks, beverages even if you want. It's made the stress of my lunch go away. What about you, Christian? Are you as stressed out as I am?
I mean, I'm double stressed out because I'm a vegetarian, which is like stress that I put on myself. So it's a different stress. But a lot of times like, oh, well, why don't you just have this? It's just, oh, this is easy. Just eat some chicken breast, which is fine. I understand people do that. And Factor isn't only vegan or vegetarian meals. But my extra stress is, what am I going to eat that is going to be delicious, nutritious, and not just like peanut butter that I spoon into my mouth because I'm too lazy to do anything else. Yeah. And so I don't know, maybe three bean vegan chili, because they also have vegan items that are delicious and super quick, easy to make. It solves almost every meal dilemma I have. And it's not only lunch. It's often dinner. It's often anytime I'm hungry. And I know I'm going to get good food quickly. And that's the end of the thought, which I love.
They got premium ingredients. These are gourmet meals. They got stuff like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, asparagus. I hate asparagus. That's the one.
Blackened tofu, which I love.
Cannot get behind any asparagus. But yes, the blackened tofu, so good. And you can customize your weekly meals. It's flexible. You can do it however much or as little as you need per week. You can pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. It's the best way to solve your meal problem. Fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Plus, they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/DLC50 and use code DLC50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code DLC50 at factormeals.com/DLC50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. All right, Christian, as you said, Slay the Spire 2, which really was just, hey, we're making it. There's very little else in the initiative showcase. There was a screenshot released after it that revealed a new class. It's Necromancer class. But, you know, Slay the Spire, I think, is one of the great games of all time, in my opinion. So I could not be more excited that they're making a sequel. And it's not coming for another year, but and that will be in early access 2025. Basically, they were just saying, hey, we're making it. But that's pretty exciting. And there's lots of other stuff. I mean, there were tons of games shown in this Triple I initiative showcase. And I just love that this is a thing. I love that these independent developers came together and they're coining this category for themselves, Triple I. You know, obviously, we know about Triple A games, these huge budget, big mainstream games like Star Wars Outlaws. But they're saying we're Triple I. We are independent, but we're proclaiming a level of quality that I think is really cool to see. And I love how this happened. You know, these publishers banding together and kind of doing a joint showcase. And I thought the showcase was just jam packed with awesome. There's so many cool things. I will name a couple of my favorites, and then I would love to hear if you guys have other things that you saw that you were excited about. I continue to be baffled about how this game 33 Immortals is going to work. Like it looks awesome. This game looks awesome. It's this kind of, you know, top down, very stylized, almost looks like Hades in a sense. It's that kind of very action-y, top down look to it, but it's going to be, you're going to play with 32 other people at any given time. So it's like you're doing raids, like in an MMO. So I don't know how the heck this is going to work. It looks wild. The video that they showed, it was pretty long in this showcase. And there was a moment where there's a lot of people on screen and they're all having to do things. And it just seems, this game looks wild. I'm really intrigued by 33 Immortals. It looks like something I like, but I just don't know how you got to get 32 other people to play with you will work.
Yeah, it's I'm excited, especially because it's from Thunder Lotus, who did games like Jotun. Spiritfarer was their last thing. I was a really big fan of Spiritfarer. I think they have a really cool art direction. It's funny, the Hades comparison. I give them super giant comparisons because they both have very distinct art styles for all their games.
Yeah.
So like 33 Immortals like stands out. And yeah, I'm curious about that too. Like just an MMO, but only with 33 players, and you're all just like working together to fight, like I said, just giant raids. But it sounds rad. Like they're one of those indie studios where like anything they put out, I'm immediately interested in. Cause I do enjoy all of their games to like various degrees. And I want to see more of this.
That game looks rad. A couple of other ones that jumped out to me. I'm very excited about Undermine 2, because Undermine was awesome. Man, and that looked so good, right?
Undermine is so good. Undermine 1. It was such a surprise at the time. I was like, oh, I'll try this out. And then, dozens of hours later, that I'm excited. I didn't expect a sequel either. So that was just like a, wait, what? They're doing what?
Yeah. And it looks like there's co-op, a second character, and looks so good.
Yeah.
Also, Streets of Rogue 2 had a big, long trailer, and that game just looks bonkers. Also, it's got everything under the sun in it. You can do anything, go anywhere, ride anything, you know, whatever kind of game you want it to be, it's there for you. It's just this massive, you know, pixel art, kind of Grand Theft Auto-esque, but to the nth degree, where you can play as a baker if you want in that game, and you know, or a wrestler, or like there's all these crazy classes. It's a procedurally generated massive world with all these different biomes, tons of vehicles. You can ride a dog, you can plan heists, you can, you know, just craft and make things, or it's just like, it's got everything. It just looks like a incredible time suck, that game. I don't know. That looked really cool to me. And then there was one other game. There's a couple of games that are already out that I was like, I'm just going to buy these. And I bought Raven's Watch, which I somehow missed, and I want to try that game. It's now sitting in my Steam library. And this other really cool looking city builder. Laesara Summit Kingdom.
Yeah.
It's like
a mountain city builder. Like it looks like almost like, hey, do you want to just build your own Machu Picchu sort of kind of? You can just do that.
Just look gorgeous too.
Yeah.
Tons of stuff here. Marcus, is there anything that I did not mention that jumped out at you?
Yeah, there's a game called RKGK.
Yes.
Which apparently you pronounce it a Rakugaki.
Rakugaki. Yeah.
It's a Gearbox.
This is from Wabasabi Games. Yeah.
Yeah, like their debut game, and Gearbox is publishing it, but it's more or less a like Jet Set Radio-esque game where it's set in like this dystopian future city that is just run by an evil corpo, and you play as this woman who is a graffiti artist that's trying to like incite a rebellion. So you're in this big kind of like sandbox city, jumping around like skating and grinding, and like you got like a little drone that you can hover on, and you're just graffitiing everything, and then also using your paint to fight the like robot enemies.
Yeah,
and it looks cool. Like the art direction, the developer said they were inspired by like anime and of course graffiti art, but it looks super nice just visually.
Yeah,
and just like I'm a platformer fan. Like it's probably my favorite genre of game. So like the flow of movement in the game, or at least in the trailers and stuff, and in the screenshots they put out, like looks promising. But yeah, one. It's supposed to come to PC sometime this year, but that was one that made me raise an eyebrow and sort of
totally earmark. I expected that to be one you would bring up, Christian, because it's very skate culture, very jet set, you know, looks like it's very inspired by that, but like a much more, it doesn't look to have that cel shaded look. It looks to be a little more realistic looking, but man, looked really neat. The other one, just visually, that was so wild is that game Mouse.
Yeah, that one's been floating around for a little while. But yeah, that one looks, that game continues to look like cool. And it's funny because their first trailer that they put out was like a work in progress where like half the trailer was just like white boxes. And it was just saying like, yeah, this is kind of what we have an idea for. And each trailer since has gradually made it look more and more polished and like it's coming together.
A first person shooter made to look like Steamboat Willie. It's basically, it's like, what if Cuphead was a first person shooter? So you're a total, it's total FPS. You got weapons you can punch, but your hands look like Mickey Mouse gloves and it's all black and white. It looks like Steamboat Willie and it's all that old, you know, 1940s, 1950s, old animation style, but as an FPS. So it's kind of like, it reminded me of that old game 13 a bit.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's wild. Just, I love games that are, it's, we're in a really wonderful time right now, especially in the indie space where art direction is so striking and people are just having these wild ideas of how, what a game's aesthetic should be. And that is one where it's like, man, the aesthetic alone makes me want to play it.
They should probably just add a scan now that they can do it of just let you play a Steamboat Willie. They probably saw it. Like, I guess we could just do that now.
Right. I guess he's on the public domain.
Also, the Vampire Survivors getting that Contra DLC. Like, I'm a big Vampire Survivors fan. I will play anything that a game wants to throw at me. Just seeing like the Contra thing looks wild where it just literally just gives you the Contra characters and drops you into a Contra map, but it's like Vampire Survivor style. And I just like, I like both of those things very much. Oh, thank you.
Totally. So
that was a pretty cool surprise.
That and the V Rising Castlevania crossover were the two kind of big IP crossovers. Christian, I feel like I'm stepping on all the stuff that you were going to bring up.
I don't need to bring it up if we already talked about it. I do find it fascinating. I don't know if like is the word because I think Konami's had a interesting relationship with their IP over the years and their developers. But I do find it fascinating how they're trying to get back into the air quote traditional gaming space. And a lot of it right now does seem to be putting their IP in other games and kind of getting that nostalgia hit or getting people primed for, and there was a new Contra game not too long, I think last year.
Or this year. Galuga.
So there are new games of theirs, but like seeing Castlevania and Dead Cells and now in V Rising seems like a perfect fit. And then Contra and Vampire Survivors is kind of like, oh, I didn't know I wanted that, but of course I do. And I'm really curious to see what else, you know, what's a slightly stealth game. I mean, maybe Streets of Rogue 2 gets a Solid Snake character at some point. Like, yeah, you can play it as Metal Gear. I don't know. Do whatever you want. But I think it's really interesting to see the way Konami is licensing out or working with other developers to keep some of their more popular IP going.
They're pretty much doing the thing that fans begged them of, like, if you guys aren't going to use them, can you at least give them to someone else? Because they're just sitting there gathering dust. Like, come on, guys. So now they're just like, all right, we'll just do that with everything now, which is nice. There's also a Dino Lords.
Yeah. You guys, like, it looked awesome.
Yeah, it's just I love it because it's stupid. And I'm a fan of just over the top stupid in my games. Of just
this was like it's like a top down RTS. Crafting isometric world. You're building castles. You're chopping down trees. You have to, you know, array your armies. Very medieval. Very, you know,
It's Vikings.
Is it Vikings?
Yeah, it's Vikings. Yeah,
but very classic. Like the way it starts, you're erecting castles and you're chopping down trees and you're organizing your armies and it's very RTS. And then it's like because there's a new enemy coming and it's like this Tyrannosaurus Rex comes out of the woods with a guy on its back, smashes through the wall of your castle, and they're like, you're going to be fighting dinos. And it's all the enemy faction has militarized dinosaurs. And I'm like, oh, I'm in.
There's a Stegosaurus with Viking shields around it, like Viking yes. armor, and it's the stupidest looking thing, and I love it.
Yeah, Dino Lords is that game. And then the other one I wanted to bring up, because this was, I think, a new reveal, and it looked pretty rad, is a game called Kill Knight.
Yeah.
Which kind of looked like this, I mean, it was the trailer was very kinetic and almost, you know, beware if you're epileptic. It was crazy, flashing, hard to kind of parse, but it looked almost like this bullet hell meets, you know, kind of action RPG. And it looked pretty cool. I don't know what to make of it, but it could be
compared to Hades in its like structure.
Hades, book, but it definitely had some bullet hell kind of craziness going on as well. Anyway, I thought the Triple I Initiative showcase was full of really interesting, cool stuff. They didn't spend much time on anything. It was really very like, show you this, move on to the next thing, show you another thing. And I thought, you know, as a first time outing for this idea, I think they did a really great job, and it made me come away. I mean, I bought two things. I'll probably buy a bunch more that are involved in this as they come up. And I'm excited. I came out thinking, man, there's like six or seven games I'm totally excited about from this showing. I've fallen so much in love with the indie space over the last, you know, 5-8 years, almost to the point where I prefer it to the AAA space in many times. So I'm pretty excited about this.
Yeah. It's weird. This showcase felt like it came out of nowhere. Like I felt like I hadn't heard of it until it was announced, like, hey, this is happening like tomorrow. Yeah. I was like, where did this come from? Who organized this? And yeah, I didn't watch it as it aired, but like, you know, looked at all the trailers afterwards. I was like, okay, this is cool. Like, I hope this comes back. I hope this is like a yearly thing or a quarterly thing. But I hope we haven't seen the last of this, because this was great.
Totally agree. And it's neat to show a mix of stuff that's coming and stuff that's already available and stuff that's in early access. I just think it was really well done. All right. My story of the week is a, you know, I think we're entering into this kind of golden age of video games as movies or TV shows. We just saw Fallout hit Amazon Prime this week. I've already watched all 8 episodes. I thought it was awesome. I think it's one of the, I would venture to say, maybe not best, but certainly most impressive video game adaptation so far. I think, you know, much harder to adapt Fallout than Last of Us. While Last of Us is undoubtedly a top tier adaptation, just absolutely stellar work, it's also a much more straightforward thing to adapt, which is a A to B story. And Fallout basically just adapted a world. It created its own story inside that world, but did it so well. Anyway, all of that is to say, this is the new gold rush for IP on the big screen and small screen. And we got word this week of yet another video game that will be getting the movie treatment. And this one, I think, less obvious. It's a game I enjoyed very much, talked about it on the show. It's called Dredge. And it will be turned into a feature film. It's from some of the folks that have been doing a lot of these, the folks that have been doing the Sonic the Hedgehog movies and a lot of other stuff upcoming. We talked about We Happy Few, Disco Elysium, It Takes Two, and Life is Strange all being in the works for TV shows or movie adaptations. And this is the same production company that's sort of making this happen. And I think Dredge is a really cool idea. If you haven't played the indie game Dredge, it's basically you're a ship's captain and you have to go out into these waters that are infested with kind of eldritch horrors. So they're talking about this one being similar to something like Sixth Sense. They said, think The Sixth Sense on the water, a grounded, atmospheric, cosmic horror blend of H.P. Lovecraft and Ernest Hemingway. Really cool. So my question to you, Marcus, is what do you think of this? Do you think we're getting to this place now where video game properties as movies just makes more sense?
I mean, it I think it always made sense. It's just people were bad at doing it for the longest time. Like, I don't think it was ever not a good idea. It's just like, I don't know why it took so long for people to execute on the many attempts at it. So it's like when this was announced, because I'm a fan of Dredge 2. It was one of my favorite indie games last year. This was like a pleasant surprise. I'm just like, really? Okay. And it might be the first big indie game that I can think of to get a film greenlit, at least that I know of. But yeah, I mean, this, like you said, this is a great time for video game adaptations now over the last couple of years, being like Fallout, The Last of Us, Sonic the Hedgehog movies, I'll throw in there. I like to think that the better that video game movies and TV stuff is received and performs, then that's sort of like, to fit Dredge, like a rising tide raises all ships kind of thing. Yeah, where like Hollywood goes like, oh, maybe we should start putting more resources into these, in a sense of like, let's get like accomplished, celebrated filmmakers to make these, like people that are great at like producing film that, you know, can add that quality to it. Yeah. Because, you know, for the longest time, it felt like video games stuff was kind of thrown to like the wolves of just like, I don't know, whoever wants to make it. Occasionally you get something made by like a relatively big time studio, but more or less it just felt like, who cares? It's a game. It'll might make some money. And now you're seeing like Fallout, like, oh, we got like Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy on this. You're like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So I like, for something like this, I feel like the potential for who you could get or who would sign up for this, or I guess like we have Johnson as co-producer, is high, just because it feels like a more, like, for lack of a better term, like artsy project. Because it's not like a, I guess what maybe the mainstream might think is a traditional video game of like, oh, you're not going around shooting or really killing things. You're just fishing in a boat and being scared of the water and talking to a bunch of weird people. So like, man, there's a part of me that thinks like, man, you could get like some, get like a Willem Dafoe in this or something. Let him be like one of the weird NPCs that you talk to. Like, go get some like
grizzled sea captain.
Like accomplished quote unquote like artsy actors in this one, and let them play all the weird people that you encounter. But yeah, I think Dredge has a lot of potential to be cool and also terrifying. So the game is like I consider it a horror game.
Definitely.
So
it's a push your luck horror game, and then, you know, horrible things come out of the sea.
Open water it taps into.
I mean, you could just call it The Lighthouse 2 Dredge, and I'd be on board. There you know, go. If you want to get Willem Dafoe in it, we already got him. Got half of the half of the crew there.
Christian, I think that, you know, this sounds like a really cool project, and it feels like we're getting to that place with video games that comic books got to, you know, 12, 15 years ago, where they came out of the, oh, if it's a comic book movie, it's probably going to be bad, into the, oh, this is some of the best stuff. And I think the trajectory to get there has been similar, in that people stopped trying to like throw away all of the things that made the source material good and just sort of embrace it. You certainly see that with Fallout, that it couldn't be more the video game than it is. And yet it still feels like a really excellent piece of drama.
Yeah. And I think it's a testament to some of the creatives that are working with this stuff. And I think, you know, you mentioned Story Kitchen, and it's a lot of the folks from DJ2 Production or Entertainment, whatever their moniker at the end of their. And I think a lot of the work that they did with things like Sonic, and, you know, before that we had Castlevania, and it's understanding the IP, but presenting it as an IP that is more than just, oh, it's the video game. Here's Angelina Jolie in that costume you like. You know, it's really finding the story in it, and what that story can be. My favorite example from the comic book era of adaptations is Road to Perdition. I feel like when Road to Perdition came out with that cast and being that caliber of film, it wasn't marketed as a comic book movie. You know, it wasn't from the page to your screen. It was, here's an incredible film with incredible actors telling this really compelling crime story. Also, it's based on a comic book, or something like Atomic Neon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. And it's based on The Coldest City. And again, it's like, that's a comic and this is a film, and it's, you don't need to tie it one to one. And I think we're getting to that now. Like Fallout in the title sequence says based on the video game Fallout. And I think a lot of people know it's a game, certainly. But to me, it didn't seem like it was as, you know, it's on Prime Video alongside Lord of the Rings, alongside all these other Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And it's just another cool piece of media that can exist because they're finding a way to tap into the essence of the game and then put it onto the big screen in a compelling or small screen, compelling way. And I think Dredge is perfect for that. I don't even know if they need to advertise it as a movie based on a game. You know, it's creepy Jaws.
Jaws. Yeah, Jaws with tentacles. You know, Eldritch Jaws. Yeah, I mean, and it's got a great title. Like Dredge is already an awesome title, and it just feels like this is going to be a really cool movie that I assume most people won't even know it is based on a video game.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the poster for it. Just because, again, like, just Dredge just looks good, and you could just do like a nice shot of the ocean with like some weird giant anglerfish looking thing in the background or something.
Yeah,
and I want to see what they do with them, all the weird fish, like the crab that's disguised as an island and stuff.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of fun they can have with that.
I also love that indie developers are sort of getting in on this. You know, it's not, we're not just reserving this for the, you know, people that have the gigantic IPs of the world. Yeah. You know,
I think that's probably just the a generational thing, as more filmmakers grew up with games that still play games. You know, they're playing stuff and, you know, in the back of their mind going, oh, this could be something. Like, maybe we should work with this, you know?
Totally.
Which has me excited for the next Gold Rush, which is when long-running video game podcasts get adapted into dramas. Just
that's gonna be real
meaty.
Good.
Yeah. And they find the essence of the podcast, but still make it with characters that work on the big screen.
Yeah. With Carrot Top as Christian Spicer.
It'll be like The Morning Show, but for a video game podcast.
Yes.
That's pretty much Jeff and I's relationship. So that checks out. That's
amazing. Yeah, it's like news radio, more like. It must be a lame to remember that show. All right. Well, let's talk about the games we have been playing. But first, take a quick break for another sponsor. All right. Let's jump into our playlist.
Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist.
Marcus, what has been on your playlist this week?
Man, this is always a loaded question because I feel like we're always playing a lot of things. But I recently wrapped up and reviewed Botany Manor, which is
I've been curious about this. I've seen it on Steam and been tempted by it. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I gave it an 8.75 out of 10, which is really good on our review scale. And it's a game I've been looking forward to for a while, like as a fan of puzzle games and sort of adventure-y games like this, where it's a first-person game set in Victorian England, where you're playing as this botanist who lives in like a 15th or 16th century manor that is like this big elaborate manor that, and she's just trying to finish her botany research book. And like I mentioned, it's a puzzle game, but the puzzles are trying to figure out how to grow a selection of like exotic flowers. So like every flower is its own puzzle in the sense that they each require the same starting components of like, you take a pot, put some dirt in it, put the seed in, you water it, but how do you make it grow? Like, what else does that plant need to grow? And so you're going around this manor and sort of adventure game style where you're finding keys to unlock doors and you're reading a lot of like notes and letters and just a lot of environmental storytelling as well as like puzzle solving. And you're using the things that you find to piece together what that flower needs to grow. So it's a lot of just like observant of like, okay, like this flower, and all the flowers are like really fantastical too, or like, oh, this one flower only grows during lightning storms. So I need to recreate the flash of lightning to get this to grow. How do I do that? Well, what if I use a camera flash? Okay, how do I create flash powder? So there's a lot of like working backwards,
that's cool,
basically. And then like finding all of these elaborate solutions to grow these plants. And in your book, it's collecting all the clues that you find, and then you're slotting in the clues because each flower has like a requisite number of clues. So you're like, okay, I found like 5 letters. Let me put them here and see if they relate. And thankfully, the game lets you know when you found all the clues that you need. So it kind of takes the guesswork out of like whether or not does this clue apply to this other flower. It's just like, no, it's only for this one. And then once you have everything you need, it says, okay, now just figure out how it all makes sense. Like, how does it all connect? And I love it because, one, it's a very cozy game. If you've seen it, it's got a very vibrant art direction. Like, the closest comparison I can give it to is like something like The Witness, just in terms of like the color palette, like very bright, kind of like primary color, especially when you're outside and you're looking at trees and stuff. It's got a very relaxing soundtrack, like very ambient, with like some very sparse like piano melodies in there. So it's like a very like I treated it as my like after work late at night game where I'm just unwinding. And I'm just gonna walk around this very pretty like mansion and just solve some puzzles that are like a great balance of not being too challenging, but also like being challenging enough to like an engaging amount of challenging. Like, oh, okay, you've got to do some real sort of like thinking outside the box in some instances, and doing some, like, in my opinion, like very fun, like dot connecting, especially as you get later on in the game where you're like, okay, this, you're finding things where you're like, there's like, this solution is very elaborate and requires like certain devices. And it's like the game just sort of like relies on you or trusts you enough to take things that seem tangentially related and finding the sort of like right order of operations to get your weird bioluminescent flower to sprout and have vines snake all over the place. And like just seeing your flowers grow when you figure it out is like, it's already that fun, like aha moment just to solve it. But then just see the visual flourish of like your flower doing whatever its like thing is. You're like, oh, that's cool. It almost makes me want to go buy a pot and like plant. And I'm like, I'm famously bad at gardening, but something about this game made me go like, maybe I should give it another shot. It does seem kind of relaxing, even though it's not going to do some wondrous thing like it is in the game. But it's like,
what a cool idea for a sort of a puzzle is how do you get something to grow? I think that's a really cool idea. It's like somebody took one of Harry Potter's classes and made a whole game out of it.
Yeah. And it also tells like a nice little underlying story about the character where you've like, you're finding notes sort of like illuminating her struggle with trying to be respected in what is still a male dominated field of like academics, where you're like, you're finding letters of her getting rejected at like different academies because she's a woman. Like there's like one note where the guy like very condescendingly is like telling her like, maybe you should do like something more basic, because that's like what that fits your skill set better. And you see it like, it's on like that letter is in the pile of like kindling next to her fireplace. So it's like, oh, she's going to burn that thing. Like she's just like, screw that. And I just like that, you know, like there's no voice acting or anything, but I love that kind of storytelling where like the game does a good job establishing Arabella as the character's personality and like her story without needing to say a word. So even if something you find isn't necessary for the puzzle, it does help flesh out and also contextualize why you're doing it, and at least for me sort of like add like motivation of like, yeah, let's show them what we can do. Let's grow these flowers that everyone doesn't know how to grow because they were like lost to time or they're like hard to figure out. Let's do it.
That's awesome.
This game needs a Tomb Raider crossover, because when it was announced, when I saw it, I was just thinking, oh, this is Lara when she's not raiding tombs. Like Power Wash Simulator got all of its crossovers. Just give me, Lara gets the seeds from somewhere, and that's all part of this adventure, is putting the stuff together.
See, it's wild that you say that, Christian, because Balloon Studios is the developer. The woman who's the head, she said that this game was directly inspired by the mansion in Tomb Raider 2. Like she said, the core premise was, what if Tomb Raider 2 was just the mansion part? Because when she played as a kid, she loved just exploring the manor and just like took that idea and just like, I guess, grew it out from there. So
that's awesome.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. again, that's called Botany Manor. It's one of the things on Marcus's playlist. What else have you been playing?
Wrapped up today, actually. Pepper Grinder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that game. Christian had some reservations about it. I think neither of us loved the boss fights, but other than that, I thought it was such a fun, cool, short, but thrilling action platformer.
Yeah, it was it was like a fun, small little thing. Like, it's not going to be on my top 10 or anything this year, but it was like an enjoyable, like, 4-hour experience. You know, like, I thought the swimming around through dirt in the drill was always pretty fun. The boss fights, I could leave, but yeah. I was like, I didn't hate them, but they were definitely like maybe the low light of the game. But I thought the sense of humor and just some of the level design and the platforming challenges were really fun. Like, it was just like a fun thing to bang out like a few levels with. And
totally.
So I liked it overall. Like, it was a fun little thing to get into. So
it's a clever concept. And I think there's some really smart things. I loved when it got into more almost like puzzly sections where you had to figure out how to do something in order to get through. That was really fun. And I don't know. I love the aesthetic of it. It just felt – it was very satisfying moving through substances.
Yeah. It's very much like the feel of movement in that game. It's like the highlight.
Yeah, it's kind of – that's why I kept comparing it to Sonic the Hedgehog, those old 2D Sonic the Hedgehog games, because there's something just kinetic and fun about propelling yourself through these areas. And, yeah, Pepper Grinder, really, really cool game. I think well worth its asking price. What else is on your playlist?
So my big thing that I've been focusing on is still Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah.
As you know, this is the year of the 80-hour RPGs. They all
decided to come out. This year, last year, every year, the 80-hour RPGs.
Yeah, because it's like I had to draw a line in the sand because I was playing like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, which I'm still relatively early in, and then this came out, and then like Persona 3 Reload, and then Dragon's Dogma 2, and then I started 3 of the 4 of those. Unicorn Overlord is another one I'll throw in there that I've started to. And it's like, oh, these are all good games. But then I realized, like, if I'm going to finish any of them, I think I need to just pick one and just focus on it and then go from there. And I picked Final Fantasy. You guys can see I'm wearing a Final Fantasy VII shirt. So sold
there.
I love Final Fantasy VII, and I really enjoyed Remake. So Rebirth, I've been psyched about. I'm about halfway through it. I'm at the Gold Saucer right now. I won't get into any, like, story details, but I've been having a blast with it. I think it's better than Remake in a lot of ways. I think even the open world fluff, which is probably like maybe like the least good stuff, but like I'm enjoying it in the context of Final Fantasy VII, where like the side missions or like the non like the repeatable side missions of like doing the Chadley stuff and filling out the world intel, like even that's kind of enjoyable just because a lot of the time you get the nice little like dialogue between the party members where they're just like talk about something randomly as you're running around trying to scan crystals and fight monsters and whatever else Chad Lee demands of you. it's like it adds like a nice flavor to what would otherwise be pretty mundane activities in like the average open world game. And then also what I've just been increasingly surprised by is just how funny the game is. Like, it is so goofy, like intentionally and unintentionally, in a way that I just really loved. And that was something I was afraid that Remake would lose, because I was afraid that they would forget that the original Seven is a pretty goofy game. Like, people, I think I call it the Advent Children effect, because Advent Children the movie is so like dire and sad, and I think that's like it's almost got like these like edgelordy emo vibe to it, especially with Cloud. And I feel like that's been a lot of the perception around Final Fantasy VII was from that movie, and people forgetting like this is the same game where like Cloud cross dresses and does all kinds of goofy stuff, but we're gonna talk about any of that stuff. And right. I've been glad that the Remake games have like not only embrace that, but in some instances like really double down on it and just said, no, this is just you have a talking dog in your party, let's just run with that. Like, isn't right. that, let's put him on a chocobo. It doesn't make sense how this dog is riding a chocobo, but it looks hilarious that he's riding a chocobo. And I think they had a nice balance of like the serious moments and just the silly stuff that just makes you fall in love with a cast that I've already like keep pretty close to my heart, but just like making me love them even more. And And also it helps that the combat is still phenomenal. Like, I love the combat that in the remake games, and this one with the synergy attacks and the like, there's just the new tweaks to it. It's just so much fun. It looks great. You can see the millions of dollars pouring out of every surface in that game.
Yeah.
Spare no expense.
Yeah. And it sounds like this week we got word potentially that the third one might be sooner than we think, coming hot on the heels of this one. So that's kind of exciting. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they proved this all wrong, because I remember when Remake came out, we were just kind of expecting, like, it's going to be like 10 years before Rebirth,
classic,
right?
Classic Square Enix. Yeah.
And then it came out in a reasonable amount of time. So it's like, oh, okay. So I guess, yeah, maybe I believe that now, that maybe we'll get whatever they call it, a third game, within like 3 to 4 years. Sure.
So that's Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and it's what's on Marcus's playlist. Christian Spicer, how about you? What's on your playlist?
Well, since we're talking about it, I'll follow up with a little bit of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth myself. I'll talk about it more when I roll credits on it. I'm about right where you are, Marcus, I think. And I continue to really enjoy that game. I haven't talked about it since we first talked about it on this show. And what I find so endearing, but also, you know, like shake my fist, pretend to be annoying about the game, is that those character moments will trick me into side missions where, like, you'll talk to the thing and talk to the quest giver, and then, like, one of your party will say something, and I'm like, oh, I know this is a side mission, but that sounds like some good character content between my core cast. I'm gonna go see what they there. It's like, that sounds fascinating. Maybe we can learn something.
Affinity. You gotta raise that affinity too.
Yes. And it like draws me in, and then I'm there and I'm like, well, you need this chocobo to build. I'm like, oh, game, you got me. Okay. now I'm in for a pound, you know, of this side quest. But it's such a quirky, like you said, I think not serious game. And playing through it now, and I'm not one who replays the original seven over and over again or anything like that, but it is such a funny world, just as an actual world that exists, where it's like, here's this world that has these huge cannons, flying, you know, ships, airships, incredible motorcycles that can do all this stuff. And then at the same time, like, they don't know all of the animals that live on their world. They're like, oh, what's that thing? I've never seen one of those before. Well, let's scan it and, you know, we'll kill it. Oh, it's a rock monster. Like, it's just such a weird... It's like such a weird, imagine, like, you know, you're going to the grocery store, then all of a sudden you're like, what? There's a creature I've never heard of before. What is that? It's dancing. It must be friendly. Like, just the pure conceit behind how big and ambitious the world they live in is, and the way they've managed to pull it off in this now more realistic, air quote, you know, graphics of Remake and now Rebirth, and have it still work. And to, yeah, it's just such a weird game that I'm so glad it exists in this, you know, $100 million era again, because I don't know how many of these types of games we get that kind of play in all of that space, whether I give you like one of the heaviest, saddest moments of character relationships, but then also just have this thing that just doesn't work, or the big villain literally twirls a mustache, you know, as they are standing in front of everybody and like, is that a ripped skirt? No, that's a jacket that goes, how many buckles are on? You know, it's just so weird, and I love it for it. So
yeah,
continuing to have fun with it.
Yeah. Also, Queen's Blood. Can't just my obsession is just, it's like the fact that the card game is as good as it is, but also they make it better because there's a whole side story tied to playing Queen's Blood. It was like, I would have played all of these if it was just a random side, like a mini game, but now you've attached a plot to it that seems absurd in a good way. So I was like, I didn't need another carrot, but you put one in front of me. And as a big Yu-Gi-Oh fan in particular, both the anime and the card game, if you give me a silly story where everyone is obsessed with a card game, I'm here for it. And so amazing. Shout out to Queen's Blood.
I'm surprised they haven't spun that out yet, because it seems good enough to be able to exist on its own.
It needs a Gwent level of, like, yeah, if you put that out as a separate app, I will play it. I will pay for it and I will play it.
Yeah, it's really well done. The rest of my playlist, gentlemen, is a continuation, with one exception, of Christian is now playing old Activision games he refused to play when Bobby Kotick was being a jerk and running that company and things I was interested Kotick in.
The Bobby Kotick funeral tour.
Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'm interested in like, these.
You're like the emails we get sometimes. It's like, hey, I never bought a PlayStation before and I just bought a PlayStation 4. Oh, what are like the 20 games I should play?
What should I play?
For Activision.
What should I play? So this week I was out at various events and away from my PC, and I was like, this is going to be the perfect week to do this. And so I played a lot of Diablo Immortal, which I had not spent a lot of time with before. And then the other one is Call of Duty Warzone Mobile, which I also hadn't spent zero time with. So I'll start with Call of Duty Warzone Mobile. And I apologize to the millions of people that play this game religiously and know all about it and make it the cash cow that it is. I don't know if you two know this, Marcus and Jeff, but there are two Call of Duty mobile games currently out in an active development, both of which with Battle Royale aspects to them. There is Call of Duty Mobile, which also has smaller 4v4 or whatever it is maps, but also has a Battle Royale function to it. And then there's Call of Duty Warzone, which is just this bigger battle royale game. And they're both running. They're both getting updates. They seem to be built on different engines, I think. Like there are graphical differences between them and different teams that are working on these things. And both seem very popular. And I was trying to decide which to download, depending on which subreddit you're in. You're either an idiot for playing Warzone because it looks like crap, or you're a dummy for still playing Call of Duty Mobile because Warzone allows for actual progression that carries over into your main Activision or whatever. I was like, just felt overwhelmed already trying to dip my toes back into these waters. It's real good. Like, who would have guessed this game that makes all the money? Like, I say that about Warzone, but I have to acknowledge it is covered in mobile trappings. Like if you think regular Call of Duty has a lot of microtransaction or pop-ups or things like that, Warzone Mobile, in my experience here for this past week, is that all the way also. Okay. You know,
it's free to play, I assume.
Yes, it is. Both of them are free to play. Okay. And it very much reflects that of when you try to log into a game, there's going to be 8 pop-ups that happen beforehand about the daily challenge, unlock this to get this XP, you're going to do this to get this season pass reward. All of that stuff exists in it. And it also exists throughout Diablo Immortal, which I hadn't spent any time with. I think I talked about me now finally playing Diablo 4, whatever, that last week, 2 weeks ago, again, as Bobby is gone and Christian experiences these games. Man, Diablo Immortal, that opening 15 minutes, half hour, or whatever it is, what a condensed Diablo. I mean, it gives you everything so fast. I mean, it gives you the hooks and then it's like, do you like that? Well, here's an IV. You know, just keep it. We're going to keep you drip, drip, drip going. I mean, you're getting gear, you're fighting big bosses, and you're doing it in a very constrained way where it's literally showing you where to go with these golden footprints. You can deviate off that path, but it's kind of just feeding you into this thing. And then after you finish that, it goes, just kidding, this is still a free-to-play game. And like all of that other stuff starts popping up. I was playing both of them. I don't have it next to me, but with my Backbone controller, both support controllers for mobile. I was playing on, I have an iPhone 14 Pro, not the newest, but a fairly recent phone. And I guess we can talk about the specifics of the game or my experiences with them. And the other game I played this week, also on mobile a lot, is Fortnite, because the Avatar Last Airbender characters have come to Fortnite now. And I'd like to use this as a jumping off point, perhaps, as a conversation for each of you, the idea of how you bring in a new player into this type of environment. Because I felt less so with Fortnite, because that's where I have the most experience, probably the most so with Call of Duty Warzone, because where I have the least amount of experience. And then Diablo is kind of that, you know, Goldilocks zone of navigating this overwhelming complex system of menus and seasons and battle passes and the, you know, PG version of the term, the encrapification of a thing, and how these long-standing games, these married to forever games, can bring in new players. And I feel like none of these games, Diablo Immortal, Fortnite, Call of Duty Warzone Mobile, do it well. But it must be successful because that's how they all do it. So to distill that into a question, Marcus, I'm curious if you play any of these kind of forever games. And if so, have you stepped away from one and come back to it and felt, this feels good? I feel welcomed back into this, or does it feel overwhelming?
Yeah, I really don't play or keep up with like live service games in general. I'm a single player minded player in general. It takes a lot for a multiplayer game to hook me long term. I'll always dive in and try it, but like Fortnite, I'll play once in a blue moon, usually with friends if there's like a big update. Like I was there for the Dragon Ball thing just because it's a huge Dragon Ball. I was like, I need to see what that is. But yeah, every time I log into Fortnite, I'm always like, oh right, yeah, this UI is terrible. Like how do I find the thing?
But successful, right? Like I feel like it's terrible on purpose. Like it clearly works for them, because if anyone has the money to fix it.
I mean, I believe that they think it's good, you know, yeah. Which is why it hasn't changed. I think they're like, no, we nailed it. What do you mean? It's indecipherable. And I think it's just like, and maybe the same with Call of Duty too, because I think the Call of Duty menu is worse. I think the enthusiasm around those games and the buzz that they get is enough to, for a newcomer, like let's say your friends are like, you got to come in here, man. They got Aang in Fortnite now. Isn't that wild and weird? And it's like all of that hype is big enough to where you will push through the front menu to get to where you need to be. I think that's what they bank on. It's just, which is true, because every time I log into Fortnite, I'll just like bumble my way through, like, how do I equip a skin that I have again? And do I need to, I have stuff that I don't know where it is, and how do you go to the store? And then even when you get to the store, even the times where I actually think like, I think I'll give them money for something, they make it very hard for me to give them money. Cause it's like, okay, what's like the different packs? And like, is this a battle pass thing, like an unlock, or can I just buy this? What's the difference? Do I need the battle pass? Do I have the battle pass already and I don't know it?
Do these gems get me that I've unlocked that had the celebration explosion on my screen? Like, I'm happy because I'm a dumb lizard brain, but like, I can buy more of them for $2.99.
And I guess it's like a combination of like, it helps if you're playing with friends because then they can navigate, but oh, you just go here to do that. Which is the only time I play it anyway. Like if I'm by myself, it's more of a like, oh man, what do I do here? But then usually that's remedied by just hitting the big play button. And then it's just like, you know what? I'll figure it out afterwards. I just want to get in and shoot people. And then whenever, once the match ends and they say, here's all the stuff you won, then I guess I'll figure it out. But like initially it's like, I just want to I'm only here for a short time anyway. I'm just going to hit the play button. But yeah, I think that probably sums it up. It's like, yeah, I think they're like, oh, no, you're going to want to play this so bad that you'll put up with this because you already have.
Well, I think, you know, anytime we talk to a developer, you know, Lana is a great example of this, and we bring up issues like this, she'll say that developers put a whole bunch of energy and thought into that very issue of onboarding people, onboarding new players, all that stuff. And yet, it doesn't seem that way. From the outside looking in,
some really games it does. I think specifically these live service games, but maybe again, well, says it works. I don't know.
My perception is, and I could be way off, and you know, people like Lana will correct me, but that's not their primary audience. They would certainly love more people to try their game, but that's not who's paying the bills. What they want to do is retain the folks they got, and that is extending that long tail, investing in something else for you to chase, something else for you to do. So the folks that are already in and invested and investing will continue to do so. And so I think that's what makes most sense. And also there's there's something to be said. This is just, again, anecdotal from my perspective, watching my 7-year-old dip his toe into some of these things. Most specifically Minecraft. Minecraft is the thing for him. But it's, there is something about the obtuse nature that is desirable. That there, it's the secret handshake of video games. It's in-groups and out-groups. The definition of the in-group is I can parse the menu system. I know how to navigate my way through it. That's how I've got the insider knowledge. I know the secret handshake. And so now I'm part of the cool kid club. And I think there's something to that. Maybe that is not completely intentional. They don't set out to make it that way from a developer's standpoint, but it works out that way and it works in their favor that way when it's, hey, I don't know how to do this. Well, you've come to the right place, friend. I know the ins and outs. I can tell you, I can welcome you into the in-group, into the inner circle of people who know the secret handshake, and now you are part of the club. I think there's some element of that that is actually at play here.
So you're saying that navigating the menu of Fortnite has a Souls-like appeal?
Yes.
Of like, no, this is a feature. It's like, it's if you can't navigate this, if you can't find your battle pass, it's a skill issue.
And you're exactly. Get good at menus. And now
it's a badge of honor. Yeah. If you can figure out how many tabs you have to get through.
I mean, I don't think we're too far off. I don't know if this is something that is intentional and developers set out to do, but I think when it happens, there's less inclination to correct it or hone it, improve that situation, because there's a certain benefit of it.
I don't disagree with that. That's interesting. I think for me, especially in these three games and two that are only mobile, and Fortnite that I was playing mobile via GeForce Now, and there are certainly other ways you can play it mobile as well. I felt like there's so much fire hose initially. Like there's like that really cool moment that happens at first, but it's a bot game or whatever it is. And then it's just like, all right, well, this game's been running for 2 years, 3 years, whatever. Okay, we got a lot to tell you. So we also know you're on your phone and you might get a text at any minute. So here we go. And then they try to reinforce those actions over and over again. And it just creates this system that, it comes at you 100 miles an hour, and what is retained versus what isn't. And then maybe looking for that guide to help you play or experience the game or have a friend that wants to usher you in or not, and the longevity of it. I think those are really interesting points. And Jeff, I hear you about extracting more from the user base, but I feel like also these games, and like Phil Spencer's recent comments about expanding that group, also has to be an issue. At some point, you need to bring people in a way that feels rewarding and exciting. And maybe I'm a console gamer and, mobile, weird. I don't know this space that well. I know it okay, but it's not for me per se in terms of those menus and those UIs. But it was really fascinating, like the amount of things to do where I felt penalized because I play on other places, where it was like, you can just play. But have you ever played on Xbox? You want to connect those. Oh, I want to connect those. What do I get? I want to connect those. Well, that connection didn't work. Click on this link that will then take you to this website to get you to click. And it feels like they're connecting everything via duct tape right now because there isn't this unified thing. Yeah. It's like, have you played on Battle.net? Yeah, I'm logged in on Battle.net. Well, this game's not on Battle.net, but you can get some points. If you played on Battle.net, why don't you log in here and do that? Then my last Old Man Yells at Cloud. Again, I really enjoyed both of these games, Diablo Immortal more so. I spent more time with that. I don't know if I'll get into all the seasons and the multiplayer parts of it, but that distilled single player stuff is very, very good crack. I mean, it is video game, dopamine hits real hard, real quick. But it's the, it's like hidden fees on Ticketmaster concerts. When you download the game, it's like 4 gigs. I'm like, I can download 4 gigs. And then you click play and it's like, ha, 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 we got you. It's 70 more gigs.
You downloaded the downloader.
Yeah, yes. And it's like, whoa, buckle up. Oh, you want to customize your character in Diablo Immortal? Oh, yes. Gotcha. That's more gigs. And I hate that. I think that really sucks.
It's like, we've already taken the liberty of deleting all of your family photos. So don't worry about it.
You're not going to need those. This is your family now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, good luck with that, Christian.
We'll see. I mean, there's more stuff coming this year we can talk about as it comes. But they're fun diversions, man. I understand it. I get it.
My playlist, I checked out a game this week called Children of the Sun. This is an indie game that is listed on Steam as a shooter. It's not a shooter. I mean, you shoot, but this is a puzzle game. This is a puzzle game through and through. The idea of Children of the Sun is that there's a really bad cult, and they've done you wrong, and you are a sniper, and you're going to eliminate that cult section by section. Here's the catch. You only got one bullet at a time. So the idea of Children of the Sun is you're a sniper. You're on the periphery of some nefarious goings on, be it a campfire or some kind of flop house or some horrible thing that's happening. And you want to assassinate all the bad, bad cult members, but you have one bullet to do it with. Luckily, you have psychic powers and you can make that bullet change direction as soon as it makes contact with somebody. So this is all about chaining together a kill. You shoot into one person and then time stops and you can rotate the camera, find the next person, shoot into that person, rotate the camera, shoot in that person. Sometimes you'll need to shoot into certain environmental things, like a gas tank will make an explosion and kill some people, or a barrel or some other part of the environment. And it's all about figuring out how to chain together one sequence. It's almost like, you know, if you ever played ancient video game like Light Cycles or Centipede. I don't think they call it Centipede. Centipede's a different game. What do they call it? The generic version. Anyway, the thing where you snakes where you would you'd make a, you were a little character with a long tail, and as time passed, the tail got longer, and you had to keep going and not interact with your own tail. It's kind of like that, except with guns. So anyway, you're trying to create this map through the environment in a single bullet shot, but it gets tricky in that you don't always see where all the bad guys are. You have to figure out that sometimes they're moving around. So the game breaks down into two phases. The first phase is the scouting phase, where you have a very limited area where you can kind of walk around the perimeter of this environment. Each level is its own environment. And you are given a certain track that you can walk around the perimeter and try to get a different viewpoint. Like, maybe I can see through that window. Maybe I can see past that tree or inside that car or whatever it is. And you can tag the bad guys, so you can see them. So a big icon, but sometimes it's not easy to even find them in this phase. And then when you're ready, you find a good position, you fire your shot, and you have to you know, it goes into one person, and then you got to guide it to the next person, aim it to the next person. And meanwhile, this sort of clock is ticking down of multiplier. So if you do that very quickly, you'll get a higher score. And the game is all about leaderboards. It's all about getting a high score and doing it as fast as you can with as few mistakes as you can. And this game is hard. It gets hard. And it also, I don't love the aesthetic of it. It is very bleak. It's very, it's a dreary game. It's got this very interesting art style where everything's sort of neon-y, blown out of characters, but the world is the opposite. It's washed out and dark and dim and dreary. And it's very violent and very, you know, it's very kind of disturbing. It'll like the text will be in your face, dead. And like, it's very, very jarring in a lot of ways. I didn't love that about it. It really leans into that. It very much defines itself by that aesthetic. And so I give it credit for making a bold choice. It wasn't a bold choice I liked, but I couldn't help but be drawn in by the pure puzzle nature of the game, which, as I said, gets really hard. You get to the point where you're just firing the bullet just to like look around and scope it out and figure out where everybody is and how the heck you're ever going to do it in one single move. And to the game's credit, a lot of the levels, there isn't just one solution. You could do it a bunch of different ways and you can be really creative in how you go about it, but it gets really hard. And they start layering on other powers that you get and other ways that can slow the bullet down. And sometimes you have to slow the bullet and speed it up and slow it and speed it up. It's like, it gets really intense, but a really clever idea. It's something I've never seen before. It's a very original concept to try to just chain together the single sniper shot and go from target to target. And when you do it, when you figure out how to chain together like 12 targets and you've used a car engine to explode and then you popped into inside a window and then out the front door and you've like created this very improbable daisy chain of calamity, pretty satisfying. It's pretty exciting. It's pretty visceral. It feels like, yeah, I really figured that out. So there's a lot of cool in this game. I wish I liked how it looked and how it felt to be in the world a little more, but I thought Children of the Sun was a pretty cool experience, even though it's not for the faint of heart. It gets challenging. I mean, maybe I'm just bad. That's very plausible, but I do think this game gets hard. There were times where I was like, I have no idea. I've been beating my head against this level. No idea how to do this. But then you see the leaderboards and people are like, oh, I did it in 15 seconds. Like, I hate you.
Yeah. I'm excited to check. I played the Steam Next Fest demo quite a bit and really liked it. And yeah, I agree with you that even in that demo, the game gets pretty challenging.
Yeah.
I recently got a code for the full game, so I haven't dived into it yet, but I plan to soon because I liked what I played of it. And it's funny because, like, this is going to be a super nerdy comparison, but hey, we're on a video game podcast, so.
Yeah,
but, like, I think the, like, one-shot nature, it reminds me so much of, like, firing Darkseid, like, from DC, his Omega beams.
Oh,
because it's just, like, the way it, like, follows everything, and it curves at, like, really sharp, odd angles to just, like, you can't hide from it because it's just going to, like, turn a corner, and you're like, how can it even turn this way?
Right.
And it, like, especially when you finish a level and you see the full, like, bullet trajectory.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like you're just seeing these sharp angles just, like, crisscrossing around the map, and you're like, yeah, that's how you got everybody. And there's something about that that speaks to me of, like, oh, I like that. There's something weirdly satisfying like, about that.
There was a lot of stuff working against this game for me, just sort of thematically and, as I said, visually, and it didn't make me feel good to be in that world. And you're killing, like, these gross, you know, cult members that are doing disgusting things, and it's just icky.
Yeah, and you're kind of gross too.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but your character.
I kept playing it because I'm like, this is compelling. This is like the puzzle aspect of it alone is so addictive. And you're just like, you know, I'd get to a level and I would be like, I can't even find all the people, because it shows you, you know, there's like 6 people here or 11 people here. Like, that's how many people you're going to have to string together. And you're like, I see 3 of them. I don't even understand. What? Where are they all? You know, and of course, they're like in the house, and you have to, you know. And one of the cool things that the game does, so I give it a lot of credit for this, is when you tag in that first phase, you tag people. And even if you fail, which I failed a lot, failed levels a lot. Even if you fail, you don't have to re-tag. It'll let your tags persist through death. Which is like, thank you, game. Thank you for that. Where I don't have to go through that whole first phase again of finding them and retagging them. In fact, if you manage to, like, shoot your bullet through somebody that you didn't tag before you fail the level, the next time you try it, that extra person will be tagged as well. It's like, I love this game's giving you credit for that and not making you do all the tedium again.
Right. It's like, you already found them.
We get it. You understand where they are. It's still not going to be easy for you to do this. So, you know, have at it.
At the end of each level, does the FBI issue a report that say it was a single gunman from a grassy knoll?
Yes.
Is that always the a single bullet?
Up and to the left. Oh, up that, and
that
to the left.
Might you might have answered the decades-long conspiracy that maybe they just curved the bullet in a weird, yeah.
I think that's what it is. This lady and her psychic powers is the answer. Anyway, that game is called Children of the Sun, and it was on my playlist this week. And that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Marcus Stewart, so fun to chat with you. Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was great.
I had a great time, and I'd love for you to tell folks where they could keep up with you and all the cool stuff you do online.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it at MarcusStewart7. I'm also on Blue Sky at the same name. And you can find my work at GameInformer.com. As Christian was kind enough to mention before, our print subscription is up and running again. You can subscribe for 1 year for just right now the sales price of $19.91. Which, if that sounds like a weird random price point, it's a fun nod to the year that Game Informer was founded. Been around over 30 years. So.
Oh, my goodness.
Or you can subscribe for 2 years for, again, the sales price, still right now, $34.99. 10 issues delivered right to your door. The subscription also includes the digital magazine, so you can choose to read whichever version you want. And it's a great way to support Game Informer directly and hopefully keep us around another 30 years. But yeah, GameInformer.com. We're on YouTube, Game Informer there too, our Twitch channel, Game Informer, and yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
This week, the next installment of my newsletter is actually coming out, Christian famously says. No, it really is. On Friday is when this next one's going to drop. I do a newsletter, casual conversations about video games. I always do my best. I think I always do, but I don't want to make it definitive. But I always reply to everybody who replies back. I really like it as a conversation. You can find it at christianspicer.substack.com. This upcoming one is about esports. I'm fascinated by esports still, even though VC investors seem not to be as fascinated by esports in 2024 as they were before. And I love print media. I love Game Informer as a print media, so I will also use part of my time this week to say 1991, it's incredible value, I think, for what you get. And I really value the long-form articles that, me admitting who I am as a person, I would not read on my phone. It's like, oh, yeah, this is a cool interview with this developer. This is fast. Okay, next. Now I'm on social media. And I love that Game Informer still has those longer features. And I think sitting down in a chair while I listen to my vinyl record as I yell about the children playing their mobile games.
You know,
games.
It's a toilet, Christian. Don't say chair.
Vinyl record could be in the bathroom.
Toilet is for phone. If you come to my house, don't pick up my phone because you don't know where that's been. Pick up my magazines. They are in great condition in my living room. And then this show is on Threads and on Instagram as DLC Hype Train. And we also put up video segments of the show for anyone to see. If you want to see a little snippet, I usually do them focused around particular games, conversations we have. That's on YouTube, but you can find that at DLC Pod. Jeff, what about you? You going skiing this week?
I went skiing last week. Had a really good time the week before. I'm trying to squeeze out the. I bought one of those Epic Passes, so you can go as many times as you want. So I'm trying to squeeze out the value, get my money's worth.
It's like a battle pass.
Yeah, for skiing, battle pass. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I got it's the season of the snow, they call it, winter.
The older you get, the better chance you get at unlocking a torn ACL, though, I think is how it works.
That is the top tier battle.
It's an
pass.
Emo. It's just you holding your knee.
It's an emo. Ah. Yeah. Not related to that in any way. I do a lot of other shows that you can check out, including the film cast, where I'll be talking a lot about Fallout this week because, like I said, I watched all 8 episodes in like 3 days. I was really into that show. I love me some Bethesda games. I love me some Fallout. And I just can't get over how great a job they did at bringing that world to life. It's such a fun show. It's so goofy. It like doesn't, it's not afraid to be goofy. Anyway, you'll hear me talk about it on the film cast, which I'll be doing. And I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns, a sports show called The Fan Controlled Show, and of course the book club. So yeah, check those all out wherever you get podcasts. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Marcus, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, so I'm a big wrestling fan, have been for pretty much my entire life, and I love reading. So as that, I picked up Becky Lynch's, who was one of the top stars in the company. I picked up her new book. I've got it here if you're watching. Becky Lynch, The Man, Not Your Average Girl, sort of a biography about her life that she wrote herself, no ghostwriter, and it's a very good book. It's I'm a few chapters in. I still got a ways to go, but I've already fallen in love with it. Just like her voice and her writing style and how funny and it's just such a like entertaining, but also very inspirational story about, you know, her beginnings and her upbringing and, you know, especially like a rough childhood she had and just climbing and clawing her way to WWE superstardom. So, like, I think regardless if you're a wrestling fan or not, I just enjoy good stories, like, you know, seeing people rise to the top and chase their dreams and achieve them. And if you're in stories like that, I think it's a good read. But especially if you're a wrestling fan, I think it's a must read.
Love it. Yeah. Becky Lynch, The Man, Not Your Average Girl book. What a great, great parting gift. How awesome was WrestleMania this year?
Oh, my goodness. That main event.
Incredible.
Had me Incredible. In tears, had me yeah, crying, I that was... ending. Maybe the best WrestleMania ending ever.
Agreed. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Another late to the party show for me on Apple TV Plus. I think I talked about Slow Horses a couple of weeks or months back where I hadn't watched it. And I was like, I think there's two seasons. And our listener's like, there's five. And I was like, okay. It's very good, though. This time it is Lessons in Chemistry. Just a beautiful, beautiful show that, yes, it's about a woman who finds herself hosting this cooking show, science-based cooking show, and you can get into like the specifics of the nitty-gritty of the show. But broadly, what it is about is love, acceptance, loss, and
cooking.
No. Cooking. No. The idea that our time on this earth is short, no matter how long of a life we live, and what we want our impact to be. And a longer life doesn't necessarily mean a greater impact. You have to fight for that. You have to choose to be the person you want to be. I think it very much hits with, you know, our sign off each week on this show about making the world a better place. And it's set in Los Angeles in a, you know, a contentious time in history. It is a fictional show, but very much real life issues about the Sugar Hill neighborhood here in Los Angeles and the consequences that LA still deals with because of the terrible racial history that much of our country has. And LA is not immune to that. And just beautifully acted performances. It's phenomenal. I'm bowled over by it. It's Lessons in Chemistry. It's on Apple TV Plus, which I think pound for pound might be the best streaming service of them all in terms of the number of quality shows that they have. They all just feel like hits and then pulpy sci-fi. I love it. It's great. If you are like me and have not watched it for whatever reason, I highly recommend it.
It's Lessons in Chemistry on Apple TV Plus. My parting gift this week is a bit of a sad one. One of the folks that has been a guest on our show, a number of times, Gabe Patillo, passed away this week. He sadly had been, battling cancer for quite a while and, he passed away this week. Father of three young kids. It is with a heavy heart that we pass that information on to you, the listener. But there is something you can do if you're able and moved to do so. There is a GoFundMe that has been established for his family. It is the Patillo Family Fund, You can find it at gofundme.com/thepatillofamilyfund, a dash between each of those words. And they're raising money. I'll read the blurb here. Many knew Gabriel Patillo from his years on the stage with DC Talk and Toby Mac for more than 20 years, but he was first and foremost a beloved husband, father, and son. After a battle with cancer, Gabe passed away on April 12th. As we grieve with the Patillo family, we would like to honor Gabe's legacy by helping his family cover their financial needs in the near and distant future. This money will help his wife, Jenny, and their three children navigate financial items such as medical, living, and educational expenses. So they're trying to raise $250,000. I wanted to pass that along to our audience. Gabe was last on our show very recently, December 3rd, I think, or 4th of last year. Just a few months ago, Gabe was on. He was his usual jovial, fun, warm, entertaining self, just a lovely person. I did not know him well. He was on our show, I think, 3 or 4 times. And every time he just was the nicest guy. And I didn't know him well. And he never talked about this, at least that I was aware of. And he always, you know, brought such a positive, wonderful energy. I am so sad for his family, and wanted to pass along to our audience an opportunity to help them with the GoFundMe.com/thepatillofamilyfund, P-A-T-I-L-L-O. Hard to pivot from that, very sad news, but we also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This is a fun one, so Let us depart from that tone, even though, you know, we certainly want to maintain the respect that that deserves. But this was a fun email that I really enjoyed getting. It comes from Lawrence Weinstein, who writes, let me start with the reasons you should read this email. I'm a faithful listener and patron of the show. Been a fan since Weekend Confirmed, actually, since the Totally Rad Show. I was a Kickstarter backer of Jeff's newest, latest, best show. I'm a subscriber to Christian's newsletter, and I actually read it.
Take that, my mom.
Lana, you're cool too. Great addition to the show. I confess, I did call Jeff old once, but only in good fun, as we were born the same year and seem to share a lot of similar gaming memories. And also, we are both old. Also, I purchased a DLC mug from store.dlcpod.com. In other words, true fan.
Great parting gift. All right, let's wrap up the show. That was a wonderful email. Thank you so much.
Now that I've subtly deployed the psychological manipulation technique known as the reciprocity principle, I'm hoping you will tell your listeners about a new sword and sorcery anthology called Neither Beg Nor Yield. I have a story in it. It's my first professionally published fantasy story, and it's freaking awesome. You know who else is in the book? Your friend, Steven Erickson, and Glenn Cook, author of The Black Company, and Joe R. Lansdale, and Howard Andrew Jones, and a bunch of other amazing writers. The table of contents is basically an all-star cast, plus me. 20 thrilling stories, almost 500 pages about heroes facing overwhelming odds to hack their way to victory or death. All of the stories are original, written for this anthology. No reprints. Did I mention that every story is accompanied by vibrant original artwork? I think anyone who enjoys sword and sorcery, heroic fantasy, will love this book. I'm having a great time reading it, and I'm honored to be in it. The ebook and paperback versions are available now, and the hardcover is coming very soon. I hope DLC will help spread the word. It would mean a lot. Best, Lawrence. Awesome. Hey, congratulations on being published alongside such greats. Steven Erickson, of course, author of the Melazin Book of the Fallen that Lana and I are reading through in the book club. I think he's a genius. And so many stellar names here. Again, this anthology is called Neither Beg Nor Yield, and you can Google that and find the ebook and paperback versions available for purchase at a lot of different places. Neither Beg Nor Yield. What a cool title. Thank you, Lawrence, and congrats. All right, If you'd like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you do that. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Marcus Stewart and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Seri and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get swag for the show at store.dlcpod.com. And our biggest thanks always are reserved for our patrons who make this show possible. Thank you, patrons, for supporting us. Our biggest thanks go to our top-tier patrons, our Hype Train patrons. They become video games just by supporting us. Hype Train games that we get to talk about every week. It's so much fun. Do you remember Zachary White, the game? Or Zachary the White, as I like to call it?
I mean, a lot of folks right now just think of Neon White. Like, that's sure where they go. But the... the white as the second name of the genre of game,
yeah,
that started with Zachary the White, the speed running, I mean, just a blur of light, just white light, just
yes,
flash of light coming past you in those rotoscope graphics, being able to pull off that kinetic, frenetic, another word that ends in, I guess, neck-ick, just yeah, breakneck-ick, speed momentum. It's incredible.
So good. So good. The sequel, Zachary Eggshell, not as good. It felt like it was like, I don't know, it was like a shade worse. You know what I'm saying? It's like
if that's the case, then I think that, I mean, I don't know if you took the trilogy as personally as I did, but the third one in the game, the Zachary Christian, maybe you consider bleaching your teeth already with how much coffee you drink, like that felt pointed.
Zachary coffeed yellow.
But when they relaunched it as Zachary, whose little kid drew marker all over the walls,
yeah,
you know, it felt like a nice fun reboot of the series.
But you're right. This was speedrunning before speedrunning was even a thing. You know, some people just called it a short game back then. But we knew better. We knew it was speedrunning.
Yeah, some people were upset and they tried to return it to Babbage's. And they were like, I beat it in under 2 hours. And I'm like, well, I would say, I wasn't working there, but I would say as the kid hanging out there, I'd be like, yeah, that's because you're good.
Right.
Congratulations.
Try to do game even better next time.
Yeah. Your badge of and honor.
They almost never took it back because it had yellowed slightly, you know?
Like the NES itself.
Yes.
You know, exactly. After it sat in the sun for a little bit, we the know color you was
played,
never the same.
We know you played that game. Look at it. It's not Zachary White anymore. Zachary like tarnished is what like it looks
my daughter's like softball cleats that she loved in the store and wore them to half of one practice, then complained they hurt her feet, and I tried to take them back and they knew they were, I got Zachary Whited, you know, they you were did like nice try.
That was the tagline of that game. Nice try.
I think it also, I remember it said, we're finishing quick is the reward. I remember for that one too, which was like during that edgy marketing time.
Yeah, it was
video games. Good.
Just yeah, like your marriage, they said.
First to anyway finish wins, I think, is the
speaking of finishing fast, do you remember the Jonathan Spiceman Forever Schlepfer game? You remember that one?
Not only do I remember it, I remember that it used mocap or cinema actual graphics, much like Street Fighter the movie or Batman Forever the video game,
yes,
of the Spice Man, kind of like Moonwalker, but this was the digital yes version of
Moonwalker, but somehow worse than that game.
Well, I mean, in Moonwalker, everybody knows you play as Michael Jackson, you kind of spin and you yeah flick and dust comes off, and that's how you. But in Spice Man Forever, again, much like the graphics of Batman Forever on Super Nintendo,
yeah,
you would just eliminate your enemies by doing a voice over oh years of a podcast. It just whittles its listeners down just yeah over
just
years.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember this was the first game that supported the Sound Blaster, and they put the blast in Sound Blaster. You know what I'm saying? Also, just like Batman, by the time you add Forever on there, it's jumped the shark. You know what I mean?
Yes, but also the Spice Man's nipples and codpiece in that game were top tier. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. The even at that time, you could recognize the time and energy they put into rendering.
Well, because it was photorealistic. It was those, you know, like Street Fighter the movie,
modeled,
the game.
Yeah. Modeled after the real Spice Man's nipples and
Can I confess one thing about that game that I think it's been long enough that my NDA no longer covers it?
Sure.
They used a voice double.
What? It wasn't it wasn't the actual Spice Man?
No, he couldn't do enough screams.
Wow. Who did they use?
Mark from marketing. They've called some guy up from marketing department to come finish the screams.
Wow. It's interesting. I've never thought that Mark from marketing sounded like the Spice Man, but now that you mention it, I've never seen them in the same place at the same time.
I mean, they are two of the most informed voices in gaming. So I think it kind of makes sense that
it's true.
You know, at least know each other. That kind of how their Venn diagrams have crossed over the years, baby.
People don't appreciate how informed the Spice Man is because they immediately stop listening to him whenever he speaks.
Which I feel like my kids must only hear the Spice Man voice by that logic.
I think that's probably true.
Have you cleaned your room today?
Stop, Dad. My ears are bleeding. Dad.
It's time to go to soccer. Where are your cleats?
Every time I try to clean my room, I get blood on the carpet. Because of my ears bleeding.
But hey, the Spice Man rescued the heck out of those kidnapped kids in that warehouse just with his voice. So it was
pretty
well
good.
Well done.
Thanks again, Jonathan Schlepfer, Zachary White, for supporting the show at the top tier hype train level. We appreciate you. If you'd like to have your name immortalized as a video game right here on the podcast, all you got to do is head over to patreon.com/DLCpod and support
us. patreon.com/DLCpod. Comma baby. But leave out the comma baby part of the URL, baby.
There you have it. All right. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.